Living with sight loss is a challenge, and we often focus on the person living with the sight loss. But what kind of strain and pressure does it put on loved ones and close friends? Julie Lim is married to Nigel, and everything was good in life. Good, that is, until Nigel had a freak motorcycle accident, which left him in a coma with a brain injury and severe sight loss. And this actually put Julie over the edge. Now, Julie has written a book called The Hub, which is a novel based on true life events. And Julie joins us now. Hi, Julie.
Hello.
Take us back to 2015 then. How did you first find out about Nigel's accident?
Well, it was the day after Boxing Day, and I was at home. It was a bright, sunny, cold winter's day. It was beautiful. We were having a family party on New Year's Eve, so I just said to him, you go and play with your friends. I'll stay home and clean and get ready for the party. So I got my loud music on, and because that's what I like to do when I'm cleaning, is play loud music. And I've literally just stopped to have a sandwich and popped the telly on and was singing along with Mary Poppins, and my phone rang. It was Nigel's photo that came up, but it wasn't his voice when I answered, and it was his best friend. And I knew in that instant that something awful had happened.
And things were very touch and go for Nigel at the beginning, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. By the time I got to the scene, which was literally probably 10 minutes, after I got the phone call, he was already in the air ambulance. They'd sedated him because he'd been having fits at the scene, and they were taking him to Hull Royal Infirmary. So I wanted to go with him, but they said, well, there's no room in the air ambulance, and actually it slows it down if they have extra people on board. So we followed in the car. It took them, I think, was it 15 minutes to get there? It's not very long. And Hull's probably about 60 miles from Mablethorpe. So myself and a family member, my daughter's partner, took us, well, we drove over there because I wasn't really in a fit state to drive. And at first when they were doing tests, because he's always been a bit accident prone, and the day before he'd been testing his bike and it had skinned all his knee and taken all the skin off, and he'd sent me a picture when I was at work with all this blood, and he's allergic to plasters. So he'd wrapped his knee up with cling film and he was covered in sand, and the nursing staff were like, what on earth has he been doing? I said, well, yeah, and so I explained, and they said, well, we've done all the scans and we can't see anything too bad, really, but we're going to keep him under. He'd done a lot of damage down his right-hand side because he hit the outcrop thing on Mablethorpe Beach with the full force of his right side. So his face was all swollen up, and he'd taken a massive knock on that side of his body. Anyway, they took him up to ICU and were trying to bring him round the next day and couldn't, and weren't entirely sure why. And it wasn't until, well, they just kept trying, and obviously I stayed at the hospital by his bedside, but they were, because it was Christmas and New Year, they were very short on staff. The nursing staff were fabulous. So he was under constant 24-hour care, but both units were full. I think there were 22 patients at Christmas. And I think they were down to minimum with consultants and registrars. So, you know, it was kind of, I can't praise them highly enough. They were amazing. But it wasn't until New Year's Eve when they decided to do an MRI scan because he got pressure in his brain, that they'd put a sensor in to try and monitor the pressure in his brain, and they couldn't understand why he wasn't getting any better. So after 6 hours, because it's really stressful for both the patient and the nursing staff when they have to take them off ICU to go to the MRI scanner. Obviously, it's life and death. You know, you've got to get them out of the ward in an ambulance, go to the MRI, do it all there, and get them back again safely. So it took, yeah, about 6 hours. And so then when the consultant and registrar came back, it was myself and his parents. In fact, they'd had to go. The toll it took on them was horrendous. They're in the 80s now. So it was myself. And to be honest with you, it was either his son or I think it was his son that was with me. My memory's a little bit blurry because I hadn't slept for I hadn't slept since he had his accident, basically. So I got sleep deprivation. And they took us into what I call the Room of Doom and gave us the morbidity talk and what would his wishes be. And because he had damage right in the centre of his brain, they explained to me that the bit that was damaged was the bit that controls everything. So, you know, your breathing, your circulation, and it's the bit that we have in common with all mammals. So that was damaged. And they said that if he did survive, then he would probably be hooked up to machines for the rest of his life. So we had the talk about what to do, and I said, well, I can't lose him. And they decided that they would give him the weekend and we'd reassess on the Monday because it was on Friday. So it was very stressful, and, you know, obviously we didn't know if we were going to lose him or not. And also, you don't want to go against somebody's wishes, but I knew that he wouldn't want to live in that state. And I'd spoken to his best friend, and he said to me that obviously motorsport's dangerous and they'd been going to Speedway and whatever, and they'd had this conversation on the way to an event. So what would happen if? What would your wishes be? So I knew that in my heart anyway, but that just confirmed it, that, you know, if it came to the worst on the Monday, we had to let him go. Sorry, this is quite painful because it puts me back into that situation.
Let's not dwell on that then, Julie. Appreciate that for you. But did you feel at the time that you were initially coping then?
Yes, but I was trying to keep everybody informed, and because he's so popular, he was trending on Twitter at one point. You know, it was, come on, Limmy Lucky 13, that was his number. And the pressures of social media and sleep deprivation had a really bad effect on my mental health. Plus the fact that we'd nursed my mum, who'd had a brain tumour, I'd nursed her at home, and she had passed away 6 months previously to that. So not only had I lost my mum, we were just starting to get our life together on our own, which sounds probably a bit selfish, but we'd been looking after mum for 3 years, and I would have done it however many years, but we were just kind of starting to move on a little bit and enjoying our life as a couple. And then this happened, and it took everything away.
I know, I've spoken to Nigel, and he felt, from his point of view, that he's coming home to you, this guy that, as he felt at that point, was totally useless to you. And you're trying to obviously support him.
Yeah.
But it took its toll on you, didn't it? You ended up getting sectioned, didn't you?
I did, yeah. The thing was that when he started to come round, it was like a miracle, and they called him Miracle Man. They absolutely did. And once I knew he was going to be okay, I kind of let my guard down. And my family said, go home. We'll look after you. Go home, get some rest, then you can come back. And that was fine. But then things started, because I was so, so tired. I went psychotic until I didn't know what was real anymore. And my brain hooked on to my passions, which are music, classical studies, which I'd done in my degree, ancient Greece, ancient Rome, all those kind of things. And we just went into overdrive. I ended up being sectioned. And then, of course, I was in a beautiful hospital. I cannot fault them either. They were so kind and so caring. But I knew that I had to get better because I wanted to be there at home when Nigel came home. So I came home on the 26th of January and he came home on the 27th. And we'd not really realised he'd been diagnosed at Lincoln, because at that point he'd been moved to Lincoln Hospital and they'd diagnosed him with Purch's retinopathy. But they'd said that it was 50-50. Some people would get the sight back and some wouldn't. Because it was to do with the link between the brain and the eyes. It was the optic nerves that had been damaged. So that was why he was having problems with his eyesight. So he came home and they kind of left us to it, really, which, you know, wasn't probably the best thing in the world.
Yeah, the two of you are coming to terms with things, and Nigel at that point obviously wasn't firing all cylinders either, was he?
We were in a very, very vulnerable state, both of us.
How did you start to pull yourself back from that then?
I didn't at that point. We were getting better. We were. and we were starting to cope a little bit. And because we're fighters, we're the people that everybody came to for help. And to find yourself suddenly needing help from other people is so alien to us, because, you know, we'd always help our parents and then our children who've got young families. You know, we've been the grandparents, we've been the children that help their elderly parents. So we were suddenly, you know, needing help and desperately trying to help each other and cope with what happened. And we also had other stresses which would have floored anybody. And then that 2 days later, I was sectioned again because it just broke me. And we came home and Nigel literally was in such a state. I didn't know what my name was. He didn't know. He's like, you need to do this, you need to do that. And he was at me constantly to do things, and I was exhausted and I wasn't sleeping again, you know, and it broke me again. And I can remember I sat on the doorstep with nothing on but a blanket, and bearing in mind it was March, sat on the back doorstep looking, staring at the sun, praying that I would lose my eyesight so that Nigel could have his back. That's what state I was in. And then they took me away that night again. And the crazy thing is that when it takes two doctors to section you, but when they ask you if you need help, you have to say no. Because if you know you need help, you're not bad enough to be sectioned. So I was saying, please help me, please help me. No, you can't say that. You can't say you need help because then you're not bad enough. But I do need help. And I have massive chunks of that evening missing in my brain that still won't come back.
Well, I appreciate you reliving this, Julie,
okay.
But
okay.
I don't want to dwell on bring back all the sadness for you. But
no, I'm okay.
I know that you and Nigel are well along the way here now, and things are a lot better now.
Yeah.
But your book is called The Hub. Now, we should say you write under the name of Joni Daniels.
Yes, Joni Daniels.
And the actual character of the book is called Kate, but it's based on your experiences, isn't
yes.
it? Tell us just a little bit about the story then.
Okay, so I used to compete in endurance riding, which is a bit like orienteering on horseback. So I'd go all over the country, and we'd regularly do a 25-mile endurance ride. So that was my thing, and I absolutely loved it. So what I did was I based my book on the character Kate having an accident on a horse, and being in a coma, and then the family coping with what happened when she came round. She wasn't the same person that she had been before the accident, and she was sectioned. And then that's kind of how it has combined both of our stories together. But at the front of the book is an acknowledgement which does explain where the book came from, the true events.
It seems like the you and Nigel... basically, I had to actually find yourselves and then each other again.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
Thankfully, you have done that now. You've managed that, haven't you?
We have. It's 3 years on now. I mean, in the second hospital, I had a very bad experience, and I really had to fight for my life to get out of there and enlist the help of an advocate who said to me he had the weight of the government behind his hand and behind his fist, and he would get me out. And I came home that day. So it's taken me a lot to come to terms with what happened when I was at my most vulnerable, and to get over, I mean, it was bad enough, you know, without all that happening as well. But 3 years later, I mean now, Nigel's anxiety was massive, obviously after losing his eyesight, and we clung to each other. We couldn't leave the house for a long time. We used to get up late. We'd probably only be up probably 3 or 4 hours in the day before we had to go to bed again. I put loads of weight on because of the medication that I was on, and we were both miserable. It was so dark in those days. But you just kind of find the strength to carry on and do the next day and the next day, and all of a sudden 6 months have gone by and actually something feels a little bit different. Like, you know, we would go out for walks on the seafront. We would be able to be apart for an hour. Nigel's friends would come and say, shall we go out for breakfast or something? You know, and I managed to get back to work just for a few hours a week. And actually, I still do that, although I've got my own business again now. But I will always keep in touch with those people because that's what we do. We help people and we love to help people. Nigel now is doing, we're just unrecognisable from 3 years ago. But if people think it's been easy, it really hasn't. We've struggled and we are going to be really successful. My book now, we're talking to people about film. You know, it's on Amazon. It's in Waterstones. I really want it to be a talking book because I want people, because we're all humans, aren't we? And I want everybody to be able to read this book, whether they're visually impaired, whether they have a learning difficulty, whether they can't physically hold a book. You know, I want it to be in all forms, every single media possible. I want people to know it's okay to have a mental illness because everybody has a breaking point.
Your book's called The Hub, under the name of Joni Daniels. Where is it available?
It's available on Amazon, so you can get it on Amazon and as Kindle as well. It's also available on Waterstones. It's not actually on the shelf at the moment, but if you go in, you can order it and collect it from your local branch of Waterstones. But that's online as well. So, yeah, at the moment, just those two.
Yeah, and available as a Kindle. Well, we will certainly be catching up with you, Julie, and Nigel as time goes on. And we'll keep tabs on you, see how things are doing. But we wish you the best as a couple for the future. And so glad that things are not as dark now. Julie Lim, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thank you.